Thank you for coming. On the way over here, I was thinking of what might be a nice topic, and just a little sharing with you about what inspired me to speak about. My visits to Boston and a number of other places during the month of September is directly related to visiting universities in September, because universities open the semester and it's a nice time before everybody gets piled up with all of their duties and busy schedules and exams and so on, to visit places where there's university programs and encourage the students to, at the beginning of the semester, take part regularly in whatever is regularly going on. So one of those places that I visited already was the University of Illinois, and one of the campuses of the University of Illinois, the University of Illinois Chicago. And I was educated when I went to give the program about the way that they were advertising the topic. The topic, one of our brahmacharis in Chicago, all summer long, every week they were holding programs near the university, at somebody's home, because even it was summer vacation, lots of people that commute, and so they held the program. So there are some regular people, and he said, I'm assuming some of you fit into this category too, they've come to the point of like accepting the principles of devotion, principles of bhakti, and they want to understand more deeply the philosophical topics. So he chose as a topic perception beyond reality, beyond perception. Reality beyond perception. So what adhoksaja, those of you from India, you know the meaning of adhoksaja. He who is beyond the senses, or truth, reality, beyond what your senses can perceive. And the little flyer that they had showed two hands. You two will pick up on this right away. One hand was showing a red pill, the other hand a blue pill. Matrix. I didn't know what that is. So those of you that don't know anything about movies like I don't, you don't know what that is. But it's a movie, at least they were sharing, that the persons who put the first version together, it's basically a parody on Bhagavad Gita. So the main character, Dr. Nu, N-E-U, was met, you know, the guy, and the guy said, which one would you like, the reality pill or the illusion pill? Something like that. And he said, the reality pill, of course. So the reality pill led him to realization of the message of Bhagavad Gita without saying it's the message of Bhagavad Gita. Anyway, so we're doing the reality pill class. And I got there early. And so there's a gathering of what I thought was going to be, you know, the regulars, because they're the ones I thought would be early. And the first one that came, that one of the early ones that came wasn't. And I just walked up and said, you know, are you one of the regulars, or you know, here? No, it's my first time. It's just sharing. And what inspired me to speak about this evening's topic. So I said, oh, really? It's the first time. How did you find out about it? I saw a flyer. What is about the flyer that inspired you? He said, well, I'm reading Bhagavad Gita. He'd never had association with devotees. He's reading Bhagavad Gita, and I'm interested in transcendence. Said, okay. Pretty good. And how much of Bhagavad Gita have you read? He said, chapter 4. I'm into chapter 4. said, okay, well, what have you gotten from what you read so far in Bhagavad Gita up to chapter 4? He said, well, Krishna's speaking and he's indicating that he's the cause and the source of everything, and he's indicating to Arjuna that he should become his devotee and take shelter of him and engage in his devotional service. And the message is that we should do the same thing. Wow, pretty good. And what part did you have difficulty with so far up to chapter 4? He said, well, there's this discussion about being detached from the fruits of your work. I mean, I kind of get it, but I kind of don't get it, and you know, I'd like to understand that better. So we had a little discussion about that topic. So I thought we could discuss a little bit about that topic. And the short answer is, it's real short, when you contact transcendence, you become freed from the fruits of your work, but you can't contact transcendence as long as you're attached to the fruits of your work. So how do you get free from attachment to the fruits of your work? Well, there's a number of things, but a theme repeated in Bhagavad Gita is to understand, in one word, understand the proprietorship of all things. So in short, we all know this, we enter the world owning nothing. We leave the world owning nothing. And in between, we're very busy accumulating things, making things ours. And with proprietorship, then the purpose of that is to enjoy sense gratification, to enjoy the things that we have, the things that's our property. And then leave the world owning nothing. So it's the attempt is an illusory attempt. And transcendence is recognizing proprietorship belongs to someone else. And just move through life with a different sense than what's 99.99999% popular in the world, which is some other idea of proprietorship than who is actually the proprietor. And there are different isms, our ideologies. Prabhupada discusses this in Isha-Upanishad. The whole of Isha-Upanishad, nice Upanishad book, centers on proprietorship. And one who understands Isavashamidam Sarvam, the one who is the proprietor of everything, knows how to live in this world. We accept those things that are the proprietor of Isha, the Supreme, as our quota, as meant for our maintenance, because the Supreme maintains all living entities. Another Upanishad verse. There's one supreme living entity who's maintaining all other living entities. Ekala Ishvara Krishna Arasava Vritya. Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam. Eko Bahunam Yovididati Kaman. There's one, Eka, who's taking care of the Bahu. That's the many. That's us. Yovididati Kaman. Whatever their needs and desires are, there's one who's maintaining Nityo. This is how it begins. Nityo Nityanam. Amongst the Nityanam, the plural living entity, there's one supreme living entity. Amongst conscious beings, Chaitanas, Chaitananam, there's one supreme conscious living entity. Eko Bahunam Yovididati Kaman. There's one who's supplying the necessities of everyone. Same as Isha Upanishad states. So, transcendence requires detachment from the fruits of your work. Well, it's a nice notion. And how do you live your life that way? Like, how do you go from being attached to the fruits of your work to not being attached to the fruits of your work? And now I see some of our regulars are coming, so I'm going to I'll tell you a little secret. One of the from the experience of someone who's been speaking in public audiences for some number of years. In the beginning, when I sing Jai Radha Madhava, and the people that don't know the words, that means they're the newer people. And those that know the words of Jai Radha Madhava, they're the ones that have been coming for some time. In case you have to have public speaking. So, and it's important to relate to the audience, so I'm going to say something that's a little bit of a stretch for the newer people, but you'll can appreciate the message without understanding the names of the people and things like that. Just so follow the principle. In Srimad Bhagavatam, so we're going from Bhagavad Gita now to Srimad Bhagavatam. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a very nice description of both the process of creation and following the process of creation, the population of the universe by the person who created the universe. Lord Brahma is the chief engineer. He takes all the ingredients in the plan and the ability to create and the Srishti Shakti, the potency for creation, and puts the universe together like a super engineer. And after he builds the universe according to the plan of Krishna, he then wants to fill it up with living entities. That's the purpose, for living entities to have an opportunity to become self-realized. So he takes the assistance of Prajapatis, living entities whose function is to create good praja or offspring. And one of those is Kardamuni. He's a direct son amongst the great sages generated from Lord Brahma. He's one. And Brahma specifically requests Kardamuni to assist him in producing good praja. So he's obedient and submissive and happy to be in service to his father. So his first order of business is to qualify himself. So he goes to the forest. Of course, this is at the very beginning of creation, so there's a lot of forest, not too many cities. Not too many Bostons and New Yorks and London and Tokyo and Paris. It's like lots of forest. So he goes to a very remote forest and he engages in the Yuga Dharma meditation. And because he's a very, like, triple very, very, very qualified devotee, he fixes his mind in meditation upon Krishna or Vishnu, and he becomes so absorbed in ecstatic meditation upon Vishnu that Vishnu comes. He appears standing on the back of Garuda as Garuda's arms are gently flapping, and Lord Vishnu is standing there with his forearms smiling, appreciating what Kardamuni is doing. He's just fixing his mind upon him. Kardamuni stands up and falls flat before the Supreme Lord Vishnu, stands up again, folds his palms and offers some very beautiful prayers. And Lord Vishnu then speaks, saying, "You please me very much by your devotion, and for that reason I've come and presented myself before you. And I know what's in your heart. In addition to being fixed upon me, you have this order from your father to create good praja. For that you require a suitable wife, and there will be an arrangement. In just 2 days, the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, another one of Lord Brahma's sons, Manu is the, he gives the laws of mankind for the whole universe. Very soon, tomorrow, 2 days from tomorrow, 2 days from today, Manu will come with his daughter, Devahuti. And she's as qualified as you are. She will be a very suitable wife for you. He's going to come and make a proposal of marriage, and you should say yes. And because your desire is not only that you have a qualified wife, but your devotional desire is that you have as a son myself, the Supreme Lord Vishnu. So I will agree to become your son." And then he says a number of other very nice things. And he said, by following this path that you've taken, even you'll become situated in family life, you won't become enamored by the allurements of material existence. Rather, progressively, you'll become more and more fixed in your devotion upon me, and at the end of this life, you'll attain me. And he disappears, flies away with Garuda. So, Karnamuni is ecstatic. He just had audience with Lord Vishnu. So he continues his practice, his sadhana. Just as Lord Vishnu said, Swayambhuva Manu comes deep into the forest with his daughter and with his wife and with some royal entourage, because he's the emperor of the universe. He's a great personality. Come into the middle of the forest, so Karamuni immediately stands to receive, although, anyway, there's details that time isn't going to permit. A beautiful exchange between a brahmana and the emperor. And in this beautiful exchange, one is respecting the other, which is very important for progressive life in the world, where there's a qualified person and another qualified person, an administrator and a brahmana, and they have mutual deep respect for one another, for the services that they're rendering for society. So in short, the marriage proposal is made. Kardama Muni accepts on one condition, a condition of religious principle, and that is, when there is a son that's of age to take care of your daughter, then I will resume my activities in the forest and in seclusion. But your daughter will be looked after by the elder son. Those of you from India, you know the culture. So Swayambhuva Manu agreed. Right there in the forest, the marriage was performed, because they had all the paraphernalia, they were ready. Royal marriage, right in the forest. And after some time, feeling separation from his daughter, Swayambhuva Manu goes back, having had the association of Kardama, who's exceptionally qualified, needless to say, he's had the personality of Godhead come before him. He becomes greatly inspired, and he similarly gradually diminishes his involvement in material affairs and prepares himself for similarly attaining the stage of perfection in his life. The Kardamuni and Devahuti, they're engaged at Satya Yuga. So life duration is much longer. And for a long, long time, she's simply serving her husband. I mean, like for tens of thousands of years, because life duration is longer in Satya Yuga. And by so doing, although she's accustomed to royal palace life, she's become lean and thin and matted hair and no fancy ornaments and, you know, all the things that go with royal life. And Karamuni is very much appreciating the dedication, the austerity, and the way of the hardship that she has had to endure to serve him. She's been happy to serve him. It was her choice, actually. She said, "Daddy, I want to marry Karamuni." Although she had never met him, she just heard of him. Actually, she heard of him through Narada Muni. Anyway, she gave her heart to him even before she was married. She was happy to be with him. But he understood her interest also was that there would be children. And so that arrangement was made. And skipping some wonderful details, when the son, Kapila Dev, an incarnation of Lord Vishnu, appeared as their son, given the name Kapila Dev. When Kapila Dev came of age, Karamuni took leave of his wife, because that was the commitment that he had gotten permission from her father. And after Karamuni left, she had been with him for thousands of years, and she's very attached, and he's now gone. And so she places a question before Kapila Dev, Lord Vishnu, which was not so dissimilar from the question the student at the University of Illinois in Chicago asked. Very different dynamics, but similar question, which is, she said to her son, "My mind is very, very disturbed, bewildered, because I'm attached. I'm attached to my material identification as a woman and the wife of Karamuni, who's now gone due to my family attachment. My mind is out of control. I'm feeling very sad. And I know this is due to the illusory energy because of my attachment. So I'm asking you, because this is your illusory energy, your Lord Vishnu, you place this energy to cover me, please remove it." She's a great devotee. She knows. It wasn't just like talking. She knows the nature of reality, the nature of illusion, and that she was covered by illusion, and that the illusion is under the control of the Supreme Lord. So she asked him, "Please help me. Please take this illusion away." And our acharyas describe, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes, Kapila Dev smiled gently, and he was contemplating, "Devahuti, why are you talking like this? You're my mother, and I'm the Supreme Lord, and you're qualified to have me as your son. So you're saying that you're bewildered like a conditioned soul? I know it's not so, but you're speaking this way for the benefit of others. This is the kind of quality that you have. You do things always for the benefit of others. So I'll respond." In essence, there's a whole chapter where he describes the mitigation of illusion comes from the association of sadhu sangha. And because sadhu sangha is the sadhu, is one who is carrying in their heart attachment for sat. That's the meaning. Sadhu. They're situated in sat. They're connected to transcendence. So one who wants transcendence must find someone who's connected to transcendence. Unless you're Karnamamuni, then you can just meditate on Lord Vishnu and he'll appear before you and it's taken care of. Or one who is situated in transcendence. By sadhu sangha, one can connect to transcendence and then become relieved from the entanglements of material affairs. That's the principle. And so now that brings us back to Bhagavad Gita. There's a number of verses, but I thought I would just discuss one verse from Bhagavad Gita connected to this. Chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita is called the most confidential knowledge. So, confidential, more confidential, most confidential. For you it goes this sequence. Confidential, what's confidential knowledge? Don't tell anybody. Here's something confidential. That's one kind of confidential, like a secret. But another kind of confidential is something that's very pertinent to you, very personal. That's confidential. Now, confidential knowledge is chapter 2. The real self is an eternal, spiritual, blissful part and parcel of the Supreme. That's who you are. Your eternal spiritual spark, not this body. Yay, we're not this body. So making that distinction between who we are and who we aren't, that's confidential. What's more confidential? More confidential. Persons may understand confidential, but not more confidential. More confidential is there's a supreme soul who's situated within the heart of the individual soul, and that's guiding us if we turn our attention to that supreme soul. Some people get the aham brahmasmi part but don't get the parabrahman part. There's a supreme soul that we're all part of. Like sparks unto a fire. There's a big fire and there's many, many sparks. We're one of those many sparks. And we're connected to that big fire. That's more confidential. And most confidential is the personal feature of the Supreme. We have a relationship with that Supreme conscious being. The tiny conscious being, us, the tiny little spark, has a relationship with Supreme conscious being. An eternal loving relationship. And when we act in that relationship of love with the eternal Supreme conscious being, that's transcendence. That's the completeness of transcendence. And how do you come to understand that, not just theoretically, but practically, through the association of one who is so situated, through sadhu sangha? So in this most confidential knowledge chapter, Krishna speaks about that person, or the type, the characteristics of such a person. If you know the verse, you can say the verse along with me. Mahatmanastamam partha daivim prakritim ashrita vajanjananya manaso gyatvabhutadim avyayam. I'm sure many of you know the verse, you just didn't say it with me. You can look it up later, 9:13 Bhagavad Gita. And I'm going to read the verse, the translation and purport, a part of the purport. O son of Pritha, Krishna is addressing Arjuna, son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, that eliminates a lot of people, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. So what is this Supreme Personality of Godhead term mean? It means the cause of all causes, the source of everything. Everything. In the next chapter, the same idea is expressed. Aham sarvasya prabhava matak sarvam pravartate. Krishna says, I am the source of everything. Then he says in reverse, everything comes from me. Backwards and forwards. I am the source of everything. Everything comes from me. So he's the source. Therefore, back to some part of our earlier discussion, he's the proprietor. It's his. Name something that doesn't come from Krishna. Prabhupada once said like this, there's two things. There's Krishna and there's Krishna's. And there's not a third thing. Then he, you know, firmly said, there's no void in the creation of God. There's some persons that have an idea. Void means the absence of either Krishna or Krishna's. Whatever that something is, it's imagination. It's not, there's two things. So he's the proprietor. And if he's the proprietor, what's the property of someone meant for? Supposing you go visit somebody's house. They're the proprietor. And you see, oh, I like your stereo. I like your cell phone. Hey, here's your car keys. And you walk out the door. Well, wait a minute. Excuse me, but where are you going with my stereo and my computer and my car keys and my cell phone? Similarly, we enter this world owning nothing and we leave the old world owning nothing. And in between, we're putting so many things in our pocket. And they're not ours. That's fruitive activity. And under different names, you know, legal and illegal. But trying to make something yours that belongs to somebody else. Eternally belongs to someone else. So, detachment from fruitive activities, like this question this young man was asking, is to recognize, requires. There is another proprietor. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you're entitled to your prescribed duties, but you're not entitled to the fruits of those prescribed duties. Those of you from India, you know the verse. Karma nevadikaraste mapaleshu kadachana. Very famous verse. You're entitled to work. But you're not entitled to the fruits of your work. Well, wait a minute. Why would I work if I'm not entitled? Who's going to go to work without a paycheck? I don't know too many people who will do that. It doesn't mean don't take the paycheck. It means recognize who the paycheck belongs to. Where does the ability to do work come from? Where does your body come from? Where does anything come from? Where does creation come from? From that source, that's the proprietor. So the work that you do, he's the proprietor, and you utilize the fruits of your work in service to the Supreme. That's what this verse is saying in chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita. And that source has these two characteristics. Original, that means there isn't something before that. And inexhaustible. From that Supreme, so many expansions of his energy and personal expansions and living entities and unlimited. And he's not reduced. That's pretty interesting mathematics. 1 - 1 = 1. That's spiritual mathematics. Well, at least those of you that know the invocation mantra from Ishopanishad, Om Purnamadak Purnamitam Purnat Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Purna means complete. So the verse is saying, from that one original complete whole, so many complete units emanate. 1 - 1. But that one is so complete that he's not reduced. He's still one. Let's do it this way. Stretch your mind as far as you can stretch your mind and try to think of something that's so big. You can take away something and it remains equally big. It's not reduced at all. Materially? Impossible. Spiritually? Possible. That's how big Krishna is. He's really Purna. Inexhaustible. So he's unchanged, although so much expansion of his energy, various forms of him, living entities, whatever there is. There's Krishna, and there's Krishnas. It's like the sun and the sunshine. They're inseparable from him. They're of him. But the emanation isn't the source. There's a difference. While there's oneness, there's difference. And recognizing the relationship between us and that which is emanated from the source, relating to the emanated stuff as his property, meant for the loving service of him, that's transcendence. Isn't that nice? That's karma-free living. And then summarizing in a very different way, the same message that they spoke at MIT on Monday. Karma-free living. It has it has one other dimension. One is this proprietorship concept, which is within this verse from Bhagavad Gita. The absolute truth, the source of everything, is inexhaustible. And it's original. There isn't a source that he comes from. He's the original. And then recognizing that all things come from him, one engages all those things in service. Engage myself, the soul, and this body, and things that the senses come in contact with, whatever there is. And even those things that are far from my reach, they also belong to the Supreme. It's someone else's domain of service. They're engaging something else in service to Krishna. That's the great soul. I was thinking in relation to this verse, Prabhupada would often speak about this verse in terms of Mahatma Gandhi. I don't know if there's anybody not familiar with the name Mahatma Gandhi, but the term Mahatma comes from Bhagavad Gita. Maha, Atma, great soul. So the qualification that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, the great soul, is one who is engaged in this undivided devotional service, one who has taken daivim prakritim ashrita, one who has taken ashrita, shelter, of the spiritual potency. There's only one thing for such a person. That's Krishna. That's transcendence. And once again, how does one get to that position of transcendence from where we are today? By association with sadhu or a mahatma. You find such a person. Hang out with them. Keep their association, not just hang out. Engage and assist them. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita chapter 4, Tadidhi Pranipatena Pariprasnena Sevaya Upadekshanti Te Gyanam Gyaninas Tatvadarshi. Same message. Tatvadarshi means one who can see the truth. Darshi, one who can see. Tatvadarshi, one who can see the truth. Find that person who can see the truth. Find that sadhu, find that mahatma who is in the daivim prakritim. Find one such person, or a number of such persons, but genuinely situated like that, and then hear from them. And there's some quality required in hearing from them, and that's with the beginning part of the final part. The beginning part is pranipat, which means submission. And then after you hear from that sadhu, you serve according to what you've heard. That was Arjuna's qualification. After he heard from Krishna, he's ready. Krishe vachanam tava. I'm ready. What you have said, let's go. Now in between, or say, before he came to that, I'm ready, let's go, there's plenty of opportunity, whole 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna is seeking clarification. That's not only permitted, it's advisable. Be very clear what is, what's what, and why. And as it becomes clear, then seva. Then one can connect with transcendence. Now, I'm not at the University of Illinois in Chicago, but I was thinking to speak this message and see that the that same student gets a copy of this so he can have a little bit more understanding of, I'm interested in transcendence. I wish there were more people in this world who were interested in transcendence. Sincerely. So to some degree we are also, to some degree we're mixed also. We're hanging on. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam taya prita chetasam vyavasayatmi kabuhi ekeha kurunandana. So the samadhau na vidyate, excuse me, samadhau na vidyate, the fixed determination, a resolute determination for singularly taking shelter of Krishna. It doesn't take place as long as bhoga, aishvarya, prasaktana. The Sanskrit word asakti means attachment. And prasakti means big-time attachment. Big-time attachment for bhoga, sense enjoyment. And aishvarya, opulent life. Boston. Or, you know, modern society. People attached to sense enjoyment and opulent life. In this life, or even better, the next life. As long as that remains, Krishna says the resolute determination for devotional service doesn't take place. Just like I was discussing today with some devotees. One of Lord Chaitanya's associates named Jagatananda Pandit wrote, he was very funny and transcendental personality. He wrote a book, Prema Vivarta, Hidden Love. He had deep, inexplicably abundant love for Lord Chaitanya, so much so that he would quarrel with him and, you know, out of love. It was different. Anyway, unique person. He wrote, don't make the mistake, I have this little saying on my wall in my office, do not make the mistake of trying to cross a river by placing one foot in two different boats. Similarly, don't make the mistake of trying to cross the river of material existence with one foot in the material boat and one foot in the spiritual boat. It's ill-advised. Place both feet in the spiritual boat. The spiritual boat doesn't say, give things up. The spiritual boat says, recognize who's the proprietor of those things. Utilize those things in service to the Supreme. Very simple. That's the spiritual boat. He's the proprietor. Not only he's the proprietor, he's the enjoyer because he's the proprietor. And not only he's the proprietor and enjoyer, but he's very generous. He gives many things to many people. He's the well-wishing friend of everyone. Then one can be peaceful and transcendental. Even in modern society, it's so complex and you know all about it. Right? churning with confrontation and conflict between man and man and family and family and, you know, everywhere. It's a very, very challenging circumstance. But transcendence can be accessed through those great souls who are so situated and are connected with the supreme transcendence. That's yoga. That's bhakti yoga. That's Kapila Dev's advice to Devahuti. And there's like 8 chapters of expanding on the answer to that question. It's a wonderful section of Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna. So, any comments or questions we have? I'm not sure which clock we're going by. That one says 8 minutes, that one says 6 minutes. Any comments or questions? Yes.
You mentioned before that the what do we have that isn't Krishna's? But we've been given an infinitesimal independence,
yeah.
Desire. So we have desire, which I guess it's, we don't want to be Krishna's, it's envy. So is that what we have?
Yes. Excellent. Excellent. That's something that actually our relationship with Krishna is ours. Even the free will, which is intrinsic to the soul, Krishna doesn't take it from us, but Krishna has given it to us. He won't take it away. He can take everything else away, but that he won't. And that's ours. That's ours to use. And so therefore, proper use of that independence is our relationship. There's this nice statement of submission to Krishna. Krishna, I am yours. And our relationship, that is mine. That's I and mine. I am yours. And our relationship is mine. Krishna likes that. And that's reality. That's reality with a capital R. Very nice question.
Can you repeat that question?
I'd have to paraphrase it. I may not say it the way he said it, but paraphrased is that which that I mentioned that everything is Krishna's, but there's one thing that's ours, and that's our free will, more or less. And I said yes, excellent. And in that free will, it's the relationship with Krishna. Now I can misuse that free will and say no. Forget him. Now there's no proprietor. Dive in and grab as much as you can. So, transcendental reality is that is something that is ours. But in a higher sense, because I am Krishna's also, that's Krishna's too. Because everything comes from Krishna. And I, the spirit soul, that has some free will and a relationship with Krishna, that's... But from the I, from the transcendental ego or self-conception, I am Krishna's property. That's who I am. I'm Krishna's energy, his part and parcel. And what's mine? The other psychic division of material consciousness, I and mine. The mind spiritualized is my relationship with Krishna is mine. It cannot be taken from me. Everything else can be taken from me. That remains. That relationship with Krishna. Let me act in that relationship with Krishna. That's bhakti yoga. Something else?
Yeah, that's interesting because the relationship is who? It's Krishna. So it is Krishna. So it's interesting.
It's also Krishna's.
Right.
There's nothing. It's Krishna and Krishna's. But that... This is Lord Chaitanya's... I don't want to get too complicated here. Lord Chaitanya's simultaneous oneness and difference teaching, which is, although I am Krishna's because I am a conscious being, as Krishna is the supreme conscious being. That consciousness that's intrinsic to the soul includes the conception of self as I am Krishna's, but also my relationship with Krishna. So that's the mind part. And that's eternally existing. Krishna doesn't take it away, even if I want Krishna to take it away. Some people talk like that. I write, if free will is the problem for my getting implicated into suffering conditions, why doesn't Krishna take away my free will? And the answer of why he doesn't take away free will is it's intrinsic to the living entity. And if there was no free will, then there'd be no love. But there is love. In the spiritual condition, there's love, and that requires two. Lover and beloved. He's the beloved. We just have to resume the lover position of the beloved. That's Bhakti Yoga. Anything else? Yes?
A question, a little more dry. It's not as interesting, but I'm sorry, I can't quote the Shastra on this, but isn't it stated somewhere that the material universes are also unlimited? Aren't they always...
Well, there's so many you cannot count, but they're finite. Unlimited? The Prakriti is unlimited, but at the same time finite. Not as Krishna is unlimited. So the numbers of universes, so many you cannot count them.
It's not actually unlimited. It's kind of like the Nityabhada thing, where we're not actually eternally conditioned, but it's so long that it's just called that. Is that it?
Those are two different concepts altogether. So it's not the same. Not the same. Unlimited, so many you cannot count. Unlimited universes, so many you cannot count. But there's a finite number. And this other Nityabhada is different conception. Okay. Anyone else? Artie's at 7, yes? Okay. So thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.